Chapter 2. The Keeper. The caravan took them north in fair comfort. Fair for Fenris, anyway. Though Varric rolled his eyes a great deal. There was nothing to do on the journey. The Inquisition soldiers on the roads had long since put paid to any bandits who might have provided distraction, and the rulers of Ferelden had strong views on slavers. Strong views they backed up with steel. Fenris had no way to wear himself out, and so, each night as he slept, he dreamed. Dreamed over and over, helplessly, of Hawk. There was nothing new about this. Hawk had insinuated himself into Fenris's dreams years ago, and never really gone away. It was almost humorous now, the anger and humiliation Fenris had felt the first time he woke up from a dream of Hawk's wicked smile and big hands that left his body excited and demanding and dreadfully aware of its isolation. That had been bare weeks after he came to Kirkwall, when the idea of letting anyone ever touch him had seemed as far away as the moon. He had felt betrayed that his body could desire the man, outraged that spirits had looked into his sleeping mind and decided that that was what they would show him. It had seemed so absurd, so unlikely, so wrong. A mage. Hawk had a way of making the absurd and unlikely turn around into the possible. The third night with the caravan, Fenris dreamed of the night he and Hawk had spent together. Maker, half a decade ago. The first time, half an accident, when the pounding of Fenris's heart had been as much terror as arousal, and Hawk had kissed him first. The dream lingered on that kiss, on the feel of Hawk's hands gripping his biceps, and the unreadable look that he had given Fenris through his eyelashes right before he turned them around and pushed. The wall against his back and Hawk's hot mouth on his throat. The fading burn of lyrium in his skin and Hawk's hands still gripping tight, fingers curled, as if he expected Fenris to pull away any moment. Then, in the way of dreams, it skipped ahead, bypassing the stumble to Hawk's room, the robes discarded on the stairs, Fenris laughing as Hawk hopped on one foot in his eagerness to get his boots off, skipped past Fenris batting Hawk's hands away so he could strip himself, and Hawk's greedy eyes as he watched, skipped straight to the two of them in Hawk's bed, the blankets kicked off to the floor, and Hawk reaching out for him without hesitation, with a smile. The flash of something fierce and tender in his eyes as he curved one hand around the back of Fenris's head and pulled him down into a kiss that went on and on and on. Fenris woke in an even worse mood than usual, and one of the dwarven merchants with the caravan, a young woman in a heavy cloak, took a look at his face and whistled.
"I don't envy you people," she said. "Isn't it creepy?"
Fenris glared at her. He had no wish to talk.
"Dreaming, I mean," she continued, unfazed. "Ooh, the Fade, spirits everywhere. Don't you ever think about that? You go to the Fade in your sleep. You just lie down every night, and then magical creatures from another world start picking through your head for fun. If I was an elf or a human, I'd never sleep. Just think about it. I've read books. You see things, and it's all real. That's creepy."
She shook her head.
"Well, good morning. I'd better go see to the horses."
Fenris stared blindly at the side of the wagon and did not notice her go. He had not thought. It had not occurred to him. He dreamed of Hawk nearly every night. That was to be expected. Hawk was much in his mind. But the Fade was real. The things you saw were only echoes, spirit-built impossibilities. But the Fade was real. The people were simply the spirits themselves impersonating the waking world, but Hawk was trapped there. Doubt whispered to him. Perhaps the Hawk he saw in his dreams was real. He had to pray that it was not so. After that day, he did not dream any more of old encounters. The Hawk he saw in his nightmares was now suffering, injured, dying, or twisted beyond recognition. Or else he was simply dead,
his corpse the one real object in the whole world of dream stuff, something to fascinate the demons, for them to play with as they so often toyed with corpses on the Suntermount. Nightmares, he told himself. Only nightmares. The journey felt very long. Varric had a contact in the Merchant's Guild who got them a berth on a cargo ship heading for Kirkwall, with a hold purportedly full of fine high-ever woolens. Even Fenris, no expert on seafaring, could see that the ship was the wrong shape for the honest merchantman she claimed to be. Her prow cut through the water like a knife. "What, the Merchant's Guild? Smuggling? Never," said Varric and winked. "Ask me no questions, and I'll tell you no lies." It was the right season for the crossing. The waking sea seemed to doze in summer calm. There was nothing to fear, nothing to worry about, nothing to distract Fenris at all. He would have been glad of a brace of pirates. As it was, all he could do was think and sleep fitfully, and then wake to brood on his dreams. He was almost glad to reach Kirkwall. And that, he thought, contemplating the city of chains as it rose in the distance, was frankly ridiculous. Kirkwall crouched, humped on the coast of the waking sea, like an aged and guileful sea monster that had heaved itself up onto the shore to die. Mighty figures of weeping, screaming slaves remained where they had towered for long ages over its harbor. Beyond them, the gallows glowered over the city, its aspect not at all improved by the black and twisted burn marks that now scarred its ancient stonework. The Mage Templar War had its roots in Kirkwall's rotten and bloody heart, and it showed. Fenris lifted his gaze to the heights of the city, where the Chantry's great roof should have stood above the rest, redeeming ugliness with some measure of gold. There was nothing there, of course. "Home, sweet home," said Varric, with every sign of sincerity as he joined Fenris at the ship's prow. He even sighed happily. "I miss this place." Fenris made a noise somewhere between a laugh and a snort. "What? It's Kirkwall. It's home. Sure, it's got its problems, but there are worse places." "Oh, yes. For example, in the Tevinter Imperium, the Mage Lords practice human sacrifice," said Fenris. "And I hear the weather in Ferelden is sometimes quite unpleasant."
"Believe me, you have no idea," Varric said. "You saw it in summer. You saw the good bits. I would take an angry magister over a walk in the bogs of South Ferelden any day. Same number of demon corpses coming to get you, but at least you don't get frogs in your boots." Hurry and bustle arose among the sailors as the ship drew close to the docks. Varric strode off to collect his bags. Fenris stayed by the prow, since he seemed to be out of the way there. He had not supposed he would ever set foot in Kirkwall again. With Hawk gone, what was there to come back for? But here they were. With Hawk gone, his mind taunted him. Varric wanted to stop off in the Hanged Man. "Listen, we've been away," he said. "Let me talk to some people, grease a few palms, get the lay of the land in Kirkwall right now. Not to mention, get a decent drink. Meryl isn't going anywhere."
"No," said Fenris, and walked off.
Varric caught up with him, slightly out of breath, as he turned the corner past the shack where Hawk's uncle had lived. Possibly still lived.
Fenris felt no desire whatsoever to stop and check.
"Fine, fine, be that way," he said. "It was just a suggestion."
"There is no time to waste," said Fenris.
"If we haven't got time, we haven't got hope," Varric said. "You've got to see that, Broody. It's been too long already."
Fenris did not look at him.
"Andraste, give me strength," Varric muttered. "Or at least a stiff drink. I loved him too, you know."
He did not seem to expect a reply, which was just as well. They turned a corner and found themselves looking down into the alienage. Varric drew in a sharp breath. At some point in the last year's upheavals, the alienage must have been attacked, and the attackers had gone after the Venendal. The mighty old tree was now nothing but a burnt and blackened stump. The splintered remnants of the great tree had crashed into the near side of the square and turned cobblestones to rubble. No one had bothered to remove any of it, shattered timber or stone.
"Now that's a damn shame," said Varric after a moment.
Though their alienage had been effectively halved in size, Kirkwall's elves had simply squeezed themselves into the space that remained and carried on. The far side of the square was crowded with people, and the old stalls selling cheap necessities were still there, crammed in tightly. As Fenris picked his way across the ruins towards Merrill's hovel, two oddities presented themselves for his attention. Firstly, there were humans mixed in with the crowd. Not very many, but far more than there should have been, and of the wrong kind. Fenris could see mothers with young children, and a group of girls with shopping baskets, a far cry from the swaggering human youths who occasionally invaded the Nyfir's slum on a dare. And secondly,
"Does that look like a line to you?" Varric said.
"We should find out what they're queuing for," said Fenris. The crowd ignored them as they drew closer. Varric seemed to find this slightly offensive.
"Hey, I'm an important guy in this city."
But Fenris was grateful. If anyone had turned around and asked him about the champion right then, as they would have done, almost certainly, only a year ago, he would not have been able to bear it. At the crowd's heart stood a rough wooden table. There was a still, small figure lying on it, and an elven man and woman holding hands as they stood by anxiously. And Merrill. Fenris stared. It was bizarrely familiar. Only the mage at the center of the scene was different. The table might even have been the very one from the Abomination's Dark Town clinic.
"Is she crazy?" Varric said.
"Oh, dear," Merrill said as she examined the child. "I'm not very good at this sort of thing. I think I'd better ask for some advice, if that's all right."
"Will it hurt him?"
the mother breathed.
"What? No! Oh, no! No, just me!"
Merrill took a knife from her belt.
"Don't worry, it's perfectly safe. Almost perfectly safe. But you should probably all stand back."
And the queuing people did move back a little. Not enough. Not nearly as much as they should have done, when an apostate elf stood there in their midst and as good as announced that she was going to use blood magic to summon a demon. No one shouted in outrage or cowered in fear or yelled for the Templars. They all just watched, as if it were natural. The people going between the alienage stalls shopping for food did not even do that. Did not so much as glance over their shoulders at the witch.
"What has she done here?" said Fenris, horrified.
Merrill sliced her own palm with the knife. The blood fell in a too even spatter, and shimmered and vanished, and a pale green wisp of nothing spun itself out of the air where it had been. Merrill tilted her head and began asking questions. Varric whistled, low.
"Would you look at that," he said.
He was talking about the crowd, not the demon. The watching elves and humans were still hanging back, but some of them were strained, listening expressions. They were trying to hear the answers.
"Oh, is that all? Thank you very much," Merrill said, and dismissed the demon.
She turned back to the sick child with white light gathering around her hands. The cut had already closed to a red line.
"He's going to be all right. Don't worry," she said to the parents.
Fenris could bear it no more. The lyrium was a cold burn under his skin when it flared to life, as it always had been and always would be. People flinched away from the sudden glow. They had not flinched from Merrill's witchery. Of course not. Blind, stupid, ignorant, they saw the monstrosity he had been made and feared it, but disregarded the willing monster in their midst. He surged forward. Varric tried to stop him, but Varric's hands could not touch him, and the bodies of the crowd must hinder him as they do not hinder Fenris in this ghostly shape.
The nervous elven mother cried out when she saw him. The father, absurdly, drew his belt knife. Meryl looked up from the magic she was working over the child and said,
"Oh, hello, Fenris. I'll be just one moment, I promise. This spell's a little bit tricky."
She turned back to her work. The light pouring from her hands deepened and darkened to a pulsing blue. The crowd, the city, Fenris, all might as well not have been there. She was biting her lips slightly as she worked. Fenris growled and advanced. Then, from nowhere, a fierce gust of wind knocked him backwards. It was strong enough to make him blink and stumble, the burn of lyrium fading. As he looked up again, he felt a fading sensation of heat on his face. He was reminded abruptly and all at once of Hawk, drunk, facing half a dozen nighttime prowlers in a high town alleyway, laughing at himself for an incompetent attempt at a fireball, before he bowed to the thieves and grinned and set the world aflame. A skinny youth had leapt into what little space remained between Fenris and Meryl. The points of his ears were just visible through his unkempt hair. His dark face was unmarked. An elf of the alienage.
"You stay away from our keeper!" he cried.
He held a mage's staff, but his hands were shaking on it. Fenris knew exactly what caliber of mage it took to outmatch him. He had no fear. He bared his teeth, and the boy visibly paled. There would be no bowing, no grin, no bloom of flame from him. This was no Hawk. "Get out of my way," Fenris advised him. The boy stood there, trembling.
"I know who you are," he said. "Everyone in the alienage knows about you. You're the crazy elf from Hightown, the champion's mage killer. You can't have our keeper. I won't let you."
"You're what?" said Fenris.
Now, everybody calm down. Calm down, I said.
Varric shouldered his way through the crowd, flashes of silver going from hand to hand. He had taken the quick route to convince people to move aside.
"That includes you."
He wrapped his hand firmly around Fenris's forearm. No real restraint, but a pointed reminder.
"And you, kid? Andraste's ass, how old are you anyway?"
"I'm nearly 17, said the boy defiantly. "And I'm old enough to fight. I don't care who you are."
"Wait, you're from Kirkwall. That's a Kirkwall accent. A low-town kid who knows Fenris, but not me. I'm hurt."
Someone shouted,
"Don't be a fool, Tarly. That's Master Tethrys, that is, from the Dwarven Merchants Guild."
"Oh, the author?"
said some idiot in bright tones.
"Does he do autographs?"
"The one and only," said Varric. "Yes, I do autographs at very reasonable prices. Have a word with my publisher."
"No, not now."
This to a book that was being thrust under his nose. He looked at the elven boy.
"Your name's Tarly?"
"Yes," said Tarly uncertainly. Varric had his attention, but his eyes kept going back to Fenris. Fenris's markings throbbed. Magic in the air still. Magic in waiting. Varric's hand gripped his forearm tightly.
"Pay no attention to my bad-tempered friend here, Tarly. He doesn't mean it."
"Yes, I do,"
Fenris snapped. Varric rolled his eyes.
"Okay, what I meant to say was, he doesn't mean any harm. He doesn't mean you any harm. He doesn't mean Meryl any harm. And he's got strong views on blood magic, but he's going to control himself because he's not a fucking moron."
Varric's voice had an edge like a blade.
"He's just going to stand here and calm the hell down, quietly, and Meryl needs to finish her spell. And meanwhile, why don't you tell us about this keeper business?"
I don't see any Dalish clans here," said Varric.
"Sounds like there's a story happening. Why don't we all sit down and have a nice, friendly conversation about it?"
"Him too?"
said Tarly, eyes darting nervously to Fenris.
"Yes, Fenris too. Don't look so worried. He's a big softy when you get to know him."
Tarly looked unconvinced. Fenris would not have known how to look unthreatening, even if he wished to, which he did not. He glowered.
"His face is just stuck like that,"
Varric confided in a stage whisper that was heard by most of the crowd. It'll be fine. Trust me. He glanced at Meryl, who was still absorbed in her spellcasting. We don't want to interrupt whatever the hell that is. Come on, this way. We'll all take a break. Show's over, folks. No, lady, I am not signing your book. Is that a first edition Swords and Shields? I thought those got pulped. Where did you even get that? No, not now. So let me get this straight, Varric said, as they sat around the rickety table in Meryl's tiny alienage hovel, waiting for their hostess. Meryl, our Meryl, is the de facto first enchanter of Kirkwall. We are talking about the same person, right? Little bit vague, easily distracted, less common sense than the average pet nug.
This is preposterous, said Fenris.
Tarly stuck his jaw out, trying to look tough and serious, and only succeeding in looking very, very young. She's the one who stayed, he said.
When the war broke out and the gallows emptied out, mages and Templars slaughtering each other and the remnants missing or in hiding or off to do battle all over Thedas, most of them heading south to Ferelden, when even the champion had abandoned Kirkwall and no one was left within 100 miles who knew the first thing about what to do with magical children. Kirkwall remained Kirkwall, always a sickeningly magical city. The mage birth rate was near double the average for most of the marches. The veil was thin here. Had to be. It was the only explanation for the place. There was no circle, and no parent wanted to send their child into a war. When the signs of magic began to show, they lied to themselves, or tried to hide it, or resorted to the methods of ancient superstition, which said it was possible to cure a mage child. And there had been no Templars to keep watch for such things, and rescue children from themselves and their well-intentioned or ill-intentioned kin before it was too late. Varric let out a low, whistling breath when the picture became clear.
And then a rash of demon possessions, am I right?
Tarly said.
My sister.
A twin sister, equally magically gifted, less afraid of her own powers, had succumbed to a pride demon during the initial chaos of the Starkhaven invasion. The two of them had been Darktown children, a step below even the elves of the alienage. They had been alone, and after the demon had been put down, not without terrible cost, Tarly had found himself facing a murderous mob.
They said it would be a mercy, he said.
The boy would certainly have died there, if not for the interference of Guard Captain Aveline and a squadron of her best. And when Aveline understood the precise nature of the problem, she sighed and sent the frightened teenager to the last fully trained mage in Kirkwall. The first, apparently, of more than a dozen apprentices.
Meryl's running a school? Said Varric.
Wonderful, said Fenris. A dozen children trained as blood mages.
Oh no, we're not allowed to use blood magic, Tarly said. She says nobody's ready yet, and you have to be careful or it goes all wrong and you get demons.
But she does not teach you to fear the demons.
The boy looked straight at him for the first time since he had begun to tell his story. I already know to fear demons, he said.
There was a pause.
I bet you do, said Varric, sympathetically.
Tarly did not look away from Fenris. He appeared to have recovered now from his earlier fear. Fenris rather wished it otherwise.
Is it true you were the champion's lover?
He said. One day I will strangle you for that book, dwarf, said Fenris to Varric instead of answering. He had never asked to have his personal business sit down in ink and then distributed far and wide for the bored and nosy to entertain themselves with.
But is it true?
Fenris took a deep breath. Then he let it out sharply, jumped to his feet, and turned away. There was not much space in Meryl's hovel. He could not storm off, but he could at least pretend the others were not there.
Sensitive subject, kid, said Varric quietly behind him. Let it go. How long till Meryl finishes what she's doing, do you think? She'll be done soon.
She always closes up the clinic after she does a big heel.
It was not above 10 minutes before Meryl appeared. She was drooping visibly.
"Hey, easy there," said Varric.
"I'm perfectly fine," said Meryl.
She was swaying a little.
"You are not," said Fenris. "Sit down before you fall over."
When she did not move, he went to her side, fully prepared to carry her to a chair if necessary. That seemed to be enough impetus to make her stumble towards a seat. Fenris hovered by her side in case she tripped. Tarly was already rushing to make some tea. There was a pallet on the floor near the fireplace, Fenris noticed in passing. The boy lived here.
"I'm quite all right, I mean it,"
Meryl said when she was sitting down and holding a steaming mug of tea.
"There's no need to make a fuss."
"I am not fussing," said Fenris coldly.
"Looked like fussing to me,"
Varric said.
"You sure you're okay, Daisy? You do look pretty pale."
"Healing's so hard," Meryl said. "Anders was much better at it than me. I don't know how he did it, and there's so much to do as well."
She sighed, took a gulp of tea, and smiled.
"But it's very nice to see you both. It's been weeks and weeks, hasn't it?"
"Sure, if by weeks and weeks you mean more than a year," Varric said.
"That long?" said Meryl. "Really? Goodness, I suppose I have been dreadfully busy."
"You know, I've met a lot of interesting people lately," Varric said. "So believe me when I say this, there's really no one like you. We're in the middle of the town where the Mage Templar War started, and you're doing blood magic in the streets?"
"What? Oh," said Meryl. "I suppose so. It wasn't really in the streets, though, was it? I mean, the alienage is more of a courtyard."
She paused at their expressions.
"Isn't it?"
Varric started to laugh.
"Only you, Daisy. Only you."
Fenris folded his arms and waited, looking as dour as he felt. For some reason, this made Varric laugh harder. Tarly looked between the three of them with a baffled expression. Finally, Varric wiped his eyes, shook his head, and said,
"Okay, time for some old friends to catch up in private, if you wouldn't mind, Tarly."
"It's all right," said Meryl, when the boy hesitated. "Don't be silly. Go and speak with Jashane about those Elfroot stocks. I promised I'd talk to her about it before evening, and I forgot."
"If you're sure, Keeper,"
Tarly said. He glared at Fenris before he left.
"That's a real firecracker of an apprentice you've got there," said Varric when he was gone. "He was all ready to take on Fenris for you. Would you believe it? Either he's brave as a lion or he's got a death wish."
Meryl blinked, her forehead wrinkled.
"But why would Tarly need to fight Fenris?"
Fenris, almost involuntarily, exchanged a look with Varric.
"Never mind," Varric said after a moment.
"Why does he call you Keeper?"
Fenris demanded.
"Oh," said Meryl. "I wish he wouldn't. They all seem to, though. Even the humans."
She made a face.
"I was supposed to be my clan's keeper one day, you know. Keeper Marathari chose me for it. So when everything started going wrong in Kirkwall, I thought, well, maybe I could help. Somehow. I thought if I could keep the alienage elves safe, that it would be a good thing to do."
"How did you go from just looking after the alienage to running a magical school and moonlighting as a healer on the side?"
Varric said.
"It just sort of happened," Meryl said. "Aveline sent the children, and I couldn't say no, could I? They're only children. And I do know how to train mages. That's a keeper's job, too. Well, I sort of know. And there were lots of books about it left behind in the gallows. I went in and had a look around. It was terribly creepy, but the library was very interesting. So I took the dangerous books, too, just in case someone tried to do something silly."
"And the healing?" Fenris demanded.
"I didn't realize how many people depended on Anders' clinic," Meryl said. "It was only a few at first, but there seemed to be more all the time. I'm not even very good at it. I think there isn't really anyone else." She paused. I thought Hawk might want someone to look after Kirkwall. And then I thought that even if he didn't, someone should look after Kirkwall. It's not anybody's fault that they live here, is it? They're just people. They shouldn't all suffer because of what Anders did. It's not fair.
I suppose you can hardly do worse to Kirkwall than you did to your own clan, Fenris said. As long as you manage to avoid murdering all these people whom you have convinced to trust in your witchcraft.
Hey now, said Ferrick. No, he's right. You're quite right, Meryl said. She was staring at the floor. I can't do worse. I thought maybe I could try to do better.
Good thought, Daisy, said Varric after a moment. Fenris looked away.
Anyway, it's lovely to have visitors, Meryl said brightly, shaking off the moment. Did you come for a reason?
It concerns Hawk, said Fenris.
What about Hawk? She said. Have you seen him? I haven't heard anything from him in ages.
There was a brief, awful quiet.
Oh, hell, Varric said. You didn't get my letter.
They told Meryl, and she cried. Fenris had not wept, had not been able to. Envy tasted bitter in the back of his throat. Then they told her why they were there.
Oh, said Meryl.
Llewellyn said she knew you from Arlathven, said Fenris. She said if anyone knew how, he cut himself off. Hope was a cruel thing.
But I don't, Meryl said. It's impossible. I mean, I think it's impossible. Though that would explain, let me think.
She got up from her chair and went and opened a kitchen cupboard. It contained, incongruously, a pile of leather-bound books. The spoils of the gallows library.
No, that's not it, she said to the first book she paged through. Not that either.
To the next. Fenris exchanged a look with Varric, who shrugged helplessly.
There's always the Illuvian, Meryl said, thinking out loud. But that would take such a lot of power, and it might break it. No. Where did I put those notes?
She opened more cupboards. Most of them were full of books and magical artifacts.
For the black market price of half of those? Varric muttered. Meryl could be living in a Hightown estate right now.
There's nothing impressive about living in a Hightown estate, Fenris said.
There is if you purchased it with actual money, and it isn't full of old corpses, Broody.
Meryl emptied out half the cupboards, and eventually found the notes she was looking for inside a pot on one of the few shelves actually containing kitchen utensils.
Here, she said, scanning them quickly. Now it makes sense. I know where we're going. It has to be there.
Where? Said Fenris.
It did not matter what the answer was, as long as there was a chance of finding Hawk. He would go anywhere that was demanded of him. Travel all Thedas, no matter how long it took, no matter the risk.
Here, Meryl said. Somewhere under Kirkwall, but quite a long way down.